So given that your site is named after a paradox, I thought of a pretty good one for you. As we record this morning, and of course this evening, it's one of the longest days in the year where I am, but it's one of the shortest days in the year where you are.
Yep.
what time did the sun go down today? Like 4?
No. It's while I was at work, so probably around 5, yeah. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Meanwhile, when I got up to do this show at, I got up at 20 to 7 this morning, the sun was totally up and shining.
Lucky you. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. It's a first, I'll tell you that. Welcome to wherever you are. My name is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you're listening to episode 61 of the Matinee Cast. It's the movie-loving podcast of my movie-loving website, thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective, and I do beg patience today if I sound a little groggy or if I struggle for a thought. It is because this is by far the earliest I have ever been up to podcast. But on with the show. When I was thinking about today's guest and today's show, the year 1995 jumped into my head, and that is because recently somebody asked me when it was that I became very cinematically aware, when it was that I kind of went from watching just broad mainstream movies to understanding that movies could be something more. And I pinpointed that down to 1995. It was when I started watching films like The Usual Suspects and Leaving Las Vegas, 7, and then later The Dead Man Walking, which would really change my perspective on what films could be. And 1995 was another great year because my guest today was born in that year, so we've kind of been coming along in our cinematic education at the same time, completely unbeknownst, and I think because she's younger, she will eventually surpass me. We are across a wire again this morning, and unless I meet a cinephile from Fiji, this wire will never stretch any further. We're on the line to Dannevirke, New Zealand, talking to the brains behind Cinematic Paradox, a site you can find at filmjunkie25.blogspot.com. Please welcome Stevie Taylor to the show. How are you today?
I am tired.
I hear you. It's been a crazy week for me, so this might be a little of a loopy show, and I do hope the people bear with us. You're dealing with an exhausted guest and an exhausted host. If you want to learn more details about the guest and recording of episode 61, check the Twitter series I call Mike and the Mechanics. You'll find those tweets if you go to my Twitter feed today being Monday, June 25th, or by searching #MATM61. On episode 61, we'll be discussing Brave. We'll be finding out people's least favorite Pixar movies, and we'll be discussing our own favorite animated films. Before that, though, we need to learn more about Stevie. This is Know Your Enemy. What was the first film you can remember seeing in a theater?
It's actually kind of funny because when I was doing the research for my speech, which was basically a history of me and movies, I always thought that the first film I ever saw was A Bug's Life. But then when I did some research, I realized that same year there was Ants that came out as well.
Okay.
And all I remember is an animated bug movie, which kind of makes things complicated. But as I said in my speech, I like to think that I had taste when I was like 2.5, so I picked A Bug's Life because it's got a higher Rotten Tomatoes rating.
It's kind of funny that it's one of those ones that everybody, you know, like everybody talks about how the films come out in pairs, kind of like Armageddon and Deep Impact and Snow White and the Huntsman and Mirror Mirror, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But everybody kind of forgets about Ants and A Bug's Life because they came out just months apart from one another.
I don't know which one I saw.
do you remember anything specific about the actual event? Like who took you, where you went?
I remember being with my grandmother and my mother, and we went down to our local cinema, which is now closed, and I just remember bugs and it being animated, but I don't remember any more than that.
Do you remember if you got through it? Because a lot of people, when they tell me this story, they talk to me about how scared they were by the whole theatrical experience. like, I did rewatch A Bug's Life not long ago, and I do remember, like, the end of that movie gets a little intense, because it's in that, like, big thunderstorm when they're trying to all escape from the bird. So that could be a little intense for a kid.
Yeah, probably.
And you would have been 3. I hate myself for knowing that.
I honestly cannot remember that much from the experience. I just remember being there, which is strange.
You're letting me down. You can't remember things from when you were 3 years old?
I know. So awful.
All right. Let's go to a clearer memory. Besides Brave, what was the last film you saw in a theater? Or sorry, no, what was the last film you watched? Any medium. I don't care if theater or no.
I actually just finished watching Hiroshima Mon Amour for my French New Wave series that I've got going on this month.
Okay. I actually haven't seen that one. What's that about?
It's basically, it was one of the first French New Wave films, and it's about a film actress and a guy from Japan, and they get together and they have this affair around the events of Hiroshima, and basically it's just a collection of their conversations, because they feel like they'll forget each other once they leave because they're going to break apart. It was interesting.
That sounds like a bummer is what that sounds like.
Yeah, I've been spending my entire month watching French New Wave films, so I've become kind of used to them. But this one seemed a lot more conversation-based than all the rest of the ones I saw, which was kind of annoying when you're a bit tired. But, you know, I like them.
Well, that's good. I think I mentioned this on a post a month or two ago. I'm actually sadly lacking when it comes to French New Wave. I am actually hoping to kind of remedy that a little bit this summer, because our Cinematheque, the Lightbox, is going to be playing a lot of French New Wave stuff. So films that I should have scratched off long ago, like Grand Illusion and Breathless and I've seen Jules and Jim, but it's so foggy in my memory that I might as well not have. So I'm hoping to get through a few of those. So actually, maybe I should probably get you to email me a couple recommendations to make sure I don't miss any. But that's cool. I'm glad to hear you liked it, and I'll add it to my to see list now. What's one of the worst films you've ever seen?
The worst film that I've recently seen is one called I Melt With You, which came out last year, I think, but it came out this year on DVD.
Sorry, it's called what?
I Melt With You.
Okay.
It stars Thomas Jane, Rob Lowe, Jeremy Piven, and Christian McKay, who, if you've been around my blog lately, you'll know that I freaking love Christian McKay. Anyway, I watched this film and I was quite interested in it because the month that I was working, I'd seen the trailer literally about 100 times on the trailer loop disc. And I thought, you know, that looks interesting. And I sat down to watch it and I was like, oh, good Lord. Like, first hour is basically dedicated to these four guys getting drunk, getting high, smoking lots, and then having these weird 10-minute conversations about how sucky their lives are. And then at the hour mark, the story, it just becomes so bizarre. I just sat there like, what the hell is going on? I sent this text to my friend and it was filled with the F word just over and over again because I was so angry at this. It was awful.
Oh boy. I remember I'd heard the title to this song because I'm pretty sure it's named after a song, and those sort of movies tend to jump out at me. But I can tell you right now, I've never seen it. It does not look all that good. Christian McKay, it's funny because I remember him, of course, from Me and Orson Welles.
Which he's amazing in.
and he didn't, like, was he at least good in this? Like, is there anything about this movie that's any good?
The performances are really good, apart from Thomas Jane, but that's because he plays such a horrible character. But, no, Christian McKay was definitely the standout in that film.
Okay, well, so there you go. At least you had something to grab onto.
Yeah, but other than that, I was just like, no, I actually literally, every time someone tees me off, I go, well, I'm going to make you watch I Melt With You, and they've heard me complain so much, so they're like, okay, I'll be nice to you now.
I'm going to start using that. I'm going to start threatening people with films they don't like.
Yeah.
This is a great tactic. I love it. What's a classic or essential that you haven't seen yet?
I haven't seen so many. And I'd like to say that's because I'm so young, but it's because our stupid DVD shop does not have anything classic-y. But one big gaping hole is probably the entire Star Wars series.
Whoa, really?
I know.
Like all six of them?
All six of them.
Wow. I would have thought, okay, because to kind of fill people in, you work in a DVD shop, right?
Yeah.
So, you've got easy access where those are concerned.
We surprisingly have them all.
The whole series. See, I think somebody was on here before who hadn't seen maybe one of them. I don't think they'd seen, A New Hope, which was the original Star Wars, the one that came out in 1977. I don't think anybody's come on here who hasn't seen any of them. Just because they're not your style, or you just haven't got that far down the list?
I don't know. It's a combination between it not being my style, but every time I look at them, I go, should I or shouldn't I? And then I'm off going to watch some other film. So I'm going to in the holidays, though. When I get some time, I'm just going to sit down and watch them all.
Okay. There's actually, when we're done here, I'm actually going to send you, I'll just tell you now, the best order to watch them in. Somebody to me mentioned the best order to watch them in, which is the original Star Wars, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, then watch prequel 1, 2, 3, and then finish off with Return of the Jedi, because then what happens is prequel 1, 2, 3 becomes one big long flashback. Because if you watch them in order, you don't really end properly, and you got to go through all this muckety muck first. If you watch them with, you know, the first films that were released first and then the prequels second, it doesn't really feel fulfilling. So if you watch them in that order, if you basically watch 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6, it kind of makes for the best effect.
Okay.
So give that a shot when you watch them, when you do watch them, not if you watch them. Because okay. Now I'm going to hold you to that. Finally, what for any reason is a film you wish you'd made?
Schindler's List.
Okay, I mean, there's a different answer. What?
Well, I actually made a list last year of all these movies that I wish I'd made, and I think it was like The Virgin Suicides and The Social Network. They topped the list, but I didn't put Schindler's List on there because I don't wish I made it, but if I'd made it, I'd be extremely, extremely proud of it.
Okay.
Because I love that movie to death, and I'd be so happy if I made something like that.
That's a great answer. I do too. It's one of those things that I don't think people quite catch how beautiful it is. Like it because it's got this this label attached to it of it being so serious and such a bummer. People kind of, they can't remove themselves from what's happening within the story and just look at it technically, because the photography in it is stunning. The music, of course, is stunning, and it's, given how heavy everything about it is, it's really, really a beautifully made film. So that's a really great choice.
I mean, I love the way it's made, because you just don't think it's a Steven Spielberg movie, but it's just a monumental achievement in cinema. So yeah.
Yeah, no, of course. And there's a great shot where I think it's the moment where Schindler and Goethe are discussing how much he would have to pay for each Jewish prisoner to free them. And they're having the conversation on the other side of a window. You know the shot I'm talking about. And we're on the other side, and it's framed. They're each in like one pane of the window, and it's a beautiful shot, but people, I don't think they remember it, because people kind of, you know, they latch on to other horrible things about the film. So I always come back to that moment.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, no, it's a great choice. Well, there we go. That's more about Stevie and her advanced film literacy at 17, which is half my age. That's enough about her. It's time to learn more about you. This is your chance to come talk to me. Why are you shaking like a leaf? Come on, come talk to me. Please talk to me. Well, in episode 60... I asked people, because I knew we were going to be talking about a Pixar film, I asked people about Pixar. What I asked was, omitting the two Cars films, because they get picked on, what is your least favorite Pixar film? And the overwhelming favorite, or least favorite, I guess you could say, is A Bug's Life. I'm not going to go through each one, but just as an example, Nick Hatt from Being Norma Jean, you know Nick, right?
Yep.
She said, I'll have to say A Bug's Life, and it's strictly because something has to finish last, and Cars isn't counted. I actually fell asleep during Cars, but yeah, I feel A Bug's Life is lovely and sweet, but it's not brilliant or mind-blowing or touching as the other Pixar stuff is. I love Pixar to bits. Like, one of my dream wacky jobs is to waitress in their cafeteria and be surrounded by all the geniuses there, and I'm convinced I'll get to wear Pixar character costumes as part of my job. And I'm very serious about this. Andrew Robinson said, when I think of the others, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3, Monsters, Up, and The Incredibles, I can't say one bad thing about them. From start to end, I was in love. Bug's Life, though, I feel didn't quite work all over. In recent viewings where I noticed the Seven Samurai homage, it works more. But it doesn't induce the two-hour-long smile that all the other Pixar films do. And when I took Cars away from him as an option, that was what happened. So it looks like basically people, you know, they're not so fussed about the bugs. Like, you said it was one of the first ones you watched. Have you gone back and watched it since?
I have, but that was so long ago that it's still really foggy, so I should really go back and watch it again.
Mm-hmm. As somebody pointed out, it is kind of cool to couple it up with Seven Samurai, because it is very much cut from that cloth. And I watched it in preparation for Brave. I went back and I rewatched all the Pixar films, and I still like it. It's still awful good. It could just be that something has to finish last. And I was kind of surprised, because I thought that when I took Cars off the table, my guess was that it was either going to be A Bug's Life or Monsters Incorporated, and nobody voted for Monsters, Inc. I was really surprised with that. Two others that got votes that kind of surprised me were Up. Rachel Thoreau from Real Insight voted for Up, and she said, every time I think about it, I like it less and less. And don't give me that song and dance about the first 10 minutes. I won't, Rachel. No denying it was excellent, but everything that came after that first 10 minutes was dreadful, particularly all the damn talking dogs. They're everywhere and not all humorous. I'm getting angry just thinking about it again, so I'll leave it at that. I do really love Up, but I remember at the time, and still, the dogs are kind of what holds it back a bit for me.
Yeah.
It's not so much the talking part of them. I was okay with the talking part. It's when the dogs start to fly.
Yes.
And the last one that I'm going to mention here before you and I talk about ours is James Blake Ewing from Cinema Sites. He actually said Toy Story. He said it's a good film, but it's the Pixar film that I connect with the least. Not a fan of the toy world. And it sounds again like he just says that something has to finish last. So that was his choice. He's probably the only person I know who's not really a fan of that first Toy Story. So what about you? Are you going with A Bug's Life as well, or is there something that you actually like less than that?
I'd have to say Toy Story 2.
Really?
Yeah, because I watched all of the Toy Stories for the first time just before I watched Toy Story 3 when it came out on DVD, and I just felt like 2 was kind of lacking something that the other two had. And when you kind of watch them all together and that one's sandwiched in the middle, you kind of see the flaws and cracks in it. I mean, it was really good,
yeah,
but it just isn't the best I've seen.
I think the one thing I liked about that was there was a kind of a sadness involved there that Pixar hadn't done yet. When they tell, basically when they tell Jessie's story, and they talk about her being abandoned and they're playing that swelling Sarah McLachlan song, I think that really kind of caught people off guard at the time. They weren't used to really being hit with that kind of sadness in the middle of a cartoon. But no, I can certainly see that. No, and I guess, you know, more than A Bug's Life, like you like Bug's Life better than Toy Story 2.
Just because
everybody else is bringing it up.
Yeah, I'll just be different.
Mine, and again, it's kind of just because something needs to fall last. And it's interesting because I got a teaser for the fact that it's coming in 3D this fall. I wasn't overly attached to Finding Nemo.
Oh, really?
No, I noticed this again when I rewatched it. There's things I like about it a lot. Like, I like the seagulls and I like the sharks, but just the quest of the story. I need to get back to my son and Nemo and his little fish tank. It was all cute, but as a complete narrative, it didn't do as much for me as some of the other ones did. Oh. Certainly not some of the newer ones where they've got what is kind of referred to as their art house trilogy of Ratatouille, Up, and WALL-E. I thought that those stories were a little bit more complete, and I don't think it's kind of not really an accident that those stories came almost right after Finding Nemo. I don't know why. I can't really explain what it is about that story that doesn't do much for me. But you like that one, of course.
Yeah, not quite.
Maybe I'm just crazy. As I said, that's a shortened feedback section, mostly just because everybody kind of all wailed on A Bug's Life and I didn't really want to rake it over the fire. But for next episode, for episode 62, which is going to be my first episode in July, I want to know what people's favorite film of 2012 so far is. We are already 6 months into this year. It's halfway gone, and I think it's about time that we kind of take a look back at what's happened. So let me know. Ryan@thematinee.ca, Twitter, Facebook. I'd like to know, what is your favorite film of 2012 so far? We will be right back after this with the new slang, and the new slang in episode 61 is Pixar's Brave. Brave is Pixar's 2012 film. It is directed by Brenda Chapman and Mark Andrews. It was written by Chapman and Andrews, along with Irene Meckie and Steve Purcell. It stars the voice talents of Kelly MacDonald, Emma Thompson, Billy Connolly, amongst a few others. And it is about a Scottish princess named Princess Merida, who she's a free spirit. That's the word I'm looking for. She's about to be promised off in marriage, and she doesn't really want the princess life. She would rather go out on adventures and shoot her bow and arrow and ride her horse. So she's basically just trying to figure out a way to make all that work. Stevie, what did you think of Pixar's Brave?
I personally loved it, like really loved it. But that was probably because when I go to the cinemas with my friends, we just have a really good time there. But no, it brought out the inner kid in me. And I do admit to like holding my friend's hand at the end and like crying the entire time. But no, I wouldn't say it's one of Pixar's best. And I know that a lot of people have said that because it comes off as more of a kind of Disney princess movie rather than a Pixar movie.
I gotta kind of take a guess here. Was some of it because you were kind of projecting, because Merida does spend an awful lot of time, especially in the beginning, riding around on her horse?
So
that didn't hurt. Well, for me, I'm with you. I really, really liked the film. This is another film where hearing a little bit of the advance word actually kind of got me into the right headspace. I've actually sort of been really avoiding details about the film, especially in the last week. It's been really hard to kind of block out what other people were who got to see it ahead of time and critics. It was really kind of hard to tune them all out. But the one thing I could kind of gauge, given everything, was that it wasn't an utter and complete knockout. Like, people weren't coming away from this and just, waving their hands with glee. So, knowing that it wasn't completely accessible kind of actually really put me into the right headspace. And I ended up really, really loving it because of that, because people weren't just as overly effusive about it as they have been about stuff like Toy Story 3 and WALL-E and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was totally the same, because I wasn't really going to go see it until you said, oh, you should go see it. My friends and I, we were kind of dreading it, and we're all like, oh, we should go see Prometheus instead. Anyway, no. We all came out really surprised by it, and I mean, I'd avoided a lot of the word like you had, because I wasn't really that interested in it, but that kind of helped, because I just I thought it was really fun.
Yeah. Was there anything in particular about it that, that stuck out for you? Like one thing that you were really smitten with?
Yes, it was the moral of the story, the mother and the daughter relationship.
Oh, okay.
I thought that that particular moral just came at a perfect time because I don't really watch it, but there's programs like Toddlers and Tiaras and other programs like that that are kind of fueling these young girls to be horrible to their mothers and, you know, be stuck up and try and be independent and all that kind of stuff before they're actually old enough to do that. And I just thought that this one, it had such a good message. And because these little girls, they'll go see it and they'll kind of learn something from it and learn to be nicer to their mothers and that kind of stuff. And that's what I really liked about it.
That's the great thing, right? It's a story about a princess who is she's defiant and she's independent, and that's good. You know, like we want girls to grow up with a spirit of their own and not, you know, wait for somebody else to come and give them their life. But she also, through the course of the story, she learns responsibility and, you know, consequences of her actions. I'm with you. I think that that's a really, really important thing to tell kids, especially now when it seems like there's a strange air of entitlement that's kind of creeping in. So yeah, especially with stuff like, yeah, like you say, Toddlers and Tiaras. And do you guys, not that I watch it, but do you guys get that My Super Sweet 16 show over there?
Yes.
Yeah, that same sort of idea, you know? I should have this stuff because I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good because that's not what Marita really wants. It's kind of funny because for a princess, she's not actually acting very princess-like. She's not acting very entitled and snotty. She's, if anything, she's just acting like she wants to be just a regular girl, if anything.
Yeah.
Well, that was very cool. What do we think about the look of this film? Now, this is probably the least Pixar-looking Pixar film. Like, it's more vast. It kind of does look a little bit more like things like How to Train Your Dragon and the classic Disney stories. What did we think of just kind of the overall aesthetic of Brave?
I loved Merida's hair. Mm. I literally cannot get over her hair, mainly because I have the exact same hair as her, except it's not red, which really is me. I thought it was just a really, like, beautifully done movie. And as you say, it's not Pixar-like because Pixar looks more kind of computer-generated and stuff, but this one just looked really fluid. Like, it still looked computer-generated, but it didn't look as much so as, like, Toy Story 3 or something like that.
Yeah, I really loved when they went out into the forest. All of the mist that's kind of swirling around. Every time those will-o'-the-wisps pop up,
yeah,
they were really, really well handled. And it's kind of funny because I think we kind of forget that when Pixar started, they had trouble rendering humans. Like, if you go back to the first Toy Story and you look at what the humans look like in that movie, they don't look right. So for them to take a story and it be populated completely by humans, they've done it a few times by now, of course. It really, really shows to me kind of how far they've come in the 17 years since Toy Story. So yeah, things like the character design on Merida with her stunning hair. I cannot imagine how long it took to write the code and the program to get the hair like that. It was really fantastic.
Yeah, it was.
How does this really kind of fit in with just the overall kind of context of Disney princesses? So, like, Pixar and Disney, of course, they're two branches of the same company. But Pixar has never done this kind of story. This kind of princess story really kind of has trickled off, even from Disney in general has trickled off. But they haven't really been telling this kind of story nearly as often as they once were. When I grew up, I kind of grew up when they were on their last few princess stories. Like, I grew up around the time of Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid and Pocahontas and all those. And then they've really drifted away. So I imagine you've seen most of those kinds of movies.
Yep, I have. Well, while I was watching it, I was reminded a lot of Tangled, which was that movie from a couple of years back about Rapunzel. I thought it was a bit like that, and I thought it kind of started off, you know, quite simply with the princess rebelling against and trying to be the way she wanted to be. But then I think it kind of started growing a bit more once I got into the mother-daughter relationship, and it started becoming something a little different to the other Disney princess movies.
Right. Actually, Tangled's a pretty good comparison because it's very recent, and it kind of... It's awesome. I saw it as well, and I think we could both recommend it if somebody hasn't seen it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it kind of came and went without much of a blip, and I gotta wonder why, because it feels like Brave, which is a very similar story, is getting far more attention.
Yeah, Tangled did just kind of come and go, and I think that had a lot to do with the fact that it didn't get an Oscar nomination that year for Best Animated Picture, which I was kind of peeved about because I thought it was really good. But yeah, just nobody really remembers it now, and yeah. I think they should, because it was actually really well done and I really liked it.
Maybe that's kind of the one takeaway we could suggest to people who are listening to this, is that if you enjoyed Brave and you haven't seen Tangled yet, go check it out, because it has similar themes. The princess in Tangled is again somebody who's not quite as empowered as Merida is, but she's also not going to take any shit from anybody. So check that out, because it would make a really great little pairing with Brave. Well, one last thing before we kind of wrap this up is I wanted to talk about the story of Brave, because the one thing that occurred to me about halfway through the film that actually really gave me a smile and really just made the whole experience that much more enjoyable is it dawned on me that with this story, Pixar has written a modern fairy tale. This is not adapted off of really anything. It's not, it's, you know, my first kind of go-to comparison with this film was How to Train Your Dragon. But How to Train Your Dragon is based off a children's novel. This is completely an original story. So kind of, isn't it kind of cool that the fairy tales that we were told as children, this is basically a new one that we can tell to our children if they hadn't seen the movie.
Yeah, I never actually thought of that.
Like, you've got everything. You've got a princess, you've got a king and a queen, you've got magic, and of course a message. And it's really quite something, because it's not the sort of story that, like, I think that might have been what caught a lot of people off guard coming in. We mentioned how the early word was a little bit more muted, like people weren't coming away from it overly effusive, and I think that's what it was. I think people weren't prepared for a fairy tale. They wanted it to be a little bit more grounded in the real, but I was great with a fairy tale. I thought that was just a fantastic thing to spend 2 hours watching.
Yeah.
All right, well, before we wrap up on Brave, which I think we can both say that we really, really liked, we'll go to the souvenir shop. What would be the one thing that you would take away if you could keep the one thing from Brave?
Merida's hair.
You could probably just watch it bounce along. Like, you could probably make that your screensaver or something, couldn't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
I see. Well, if I was to take away one thing and keep it, there's a sequence which I'm not completely going to spoil, but it involves Meredith's three brothers, which they are awesome. For three characters who don't talk, they are amazing. And there's a sequence where they need to retrieve a key. And I won't say exactly how or why or what they do, but what I will say is that there are just four shots that go one that cut one after the other, and it might be the greatest example of editing that I've ever seen. In just four shots, you just tell something so perfectly well.
My friends and I were in hysterics at that moment, because we were not expecting that from an animated movie.
No, and nobody is. And it's that final triumphant shot when he holds up the key, right?
Yep.
Well, we both obviously really love Brave, but we do rate these films. So, Stevie Taylor, on a scale of 1 star to 4, what do you give Brave?
I would give it a 3 out of 4.
Okay. I give it kind of a low 4, if that makes sense. It's one that I'm not overly effusive about it, but there's so much that's going to stick with me. And I'm just so impressed that they went down this road. It's not the oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, 4 stars out of 4 for me. It's more of a reluctant 4, but it is a very well-earned 4 out of 4 for me. It's a really beautiful movie. It's an amazing story. And I think that this is one of their films that's going to age really, really well. So 4 out of 4 for me. Let us know what you think. Ryan at the Matinee, Facebook, Twitter. What did you think of Pixar's Brave? And maybe we're both totally nuts, or maybe you don't think we're effusive enough. But we will be right back after this with a top 5, the best of you. For today's top 5, I thought I'd do something a little bit retrospective, shall we say. Back all the way back in episode 1, which I don't think anybody listened to, and if they do, they certainly don't remember it because it was almost 3 years ago now, we talked about our favorite animated films. And given that it's been 60 episodes since then, I thought it's time to kind of go back and dust that one off and trot that subject out one more time in honor of Brave. There are some changes for me. I actually went back and listened to the 5 that I chose, and along with 1 or 2 new titles, there's ones that have been moved around into various spots. But of course, I also have a new guest, so I'm going to hear a few more answers coming at me from the other side. So Stevie, why don't you get us started? What is your, are these the lists you sent me, are they in order? Like, is the
yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we will go in order with these ones. And Stevie, why don't you get us started? What is your number 5 animated film?
Madagascar.
And why?
I think it's kind of a personal thing, because my mother and I, we used to go on holiday a lot. And basically our holidays just sitting in a motel room and watching movies on the paid TV. And there were 2 movies that were always on, and it was Nanny McPhee and Madagascar, and we'd just watch them over and over and over again. And Madagascar, it just never gets old.
That sounds like a great holiday, let me tell you. I'm not quite as fussed about Madagascar. I usually kind of point to it as why DreamWorks kind of needs to step up their game, is it feels like they just do a sort of generic cartoon and drop in a lot of famous voices.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad movie. I think like we have a copy and everything like that. It wouldn't be my favorite, but now that you tell me that story, I'm like, well, how can you not choose it? And of course, you know, the one thing I will always remember from Madagascar is I actually like some of the supporting characters a little bit more. I love the penguins and the monkeys.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, they are fantastic. Well, my number 5 is one that I just watched for the first time last year. My next guest on the Matinee Cast is going to be Alex Kittle, and she actually designed for me an anime watch list, because I really wasn't into anime at all, and she said, we'll give it a try. And one of the films that she pointed me towards was Paprika. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, get your hands on it if you can. And you specifically, because it will remind you very, very much of Inception.
Yep, I've heard that before. Yeah.
It is beautiful to look at. It's kind of crazy, first of all. It's a little bit off the wall and a little bit nutty, but it is beautiful to look at. And if you have a half decent sound system, if you've got like a home theater or something like that, it sounds amazing. It's actually kind of funny, because we got a sound system for Christmas, and when I first set it up, I was kind of convinced that I had it set up wrong, because all I was ever hearing was just the movies playing louder. I was not hearing any kind of separation or anything like that. I put on the Blu-ray for Paprika. No. I had the sound system set up just fine. It was just, I wasn't playing movies that were taking full advantage of it. And it is, as I said, it's like Inception. It's very much deals with going into dreams and like dreams within dreams, and it's very much off the wall and very, very imaginative. So if you haven't seen it yet, I will be really, really curious to see what you think about Paprika, if you ever do track it down.
No, definitely check it out.
Does your shop carry that one, or are you going to have to order it in?
No, our shop doesn't believe in getting foreign movies.
That's so sad. Can I ask you, do people come into your shop and ask you to recommend stuff?
Yes, all the time.
And like, do they commend you on your good taste?
Yes, apart from one lady, because we have these things called staff picks, and basically I take over the entire wall because I'm the only one dozen.
Rightfully so.
But I did one on Senna, which the documentary, which I loved.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And this person came in and she said that she hated it. And she said that I should not be recommending movies at all. And I was like, well, okay then.
Oh,
and then basically after that, I just started recommending like indie films like Take Shelter and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy just to piss people off.
See, I would have come back with her and said, if you don't like this movie, I don't think you should be allowed to rent anymore.
Yeah, I was going to, but I had to.
Oh, customer's always right. Yeah, I've heard that before. All right, that's Paprika. What's your next film?
Shrek. Growing up in New Zealand, in Dannevirke, it was practically the only movie that our teachers had. And time we got an opportunity to watch a movie, it would be Shrek, and all of us would sit with our eyes glued to the screen, reciting every single word. Like, I could probably remember the entire thing off by heart. And then it's on every Christmas as well. It's just kind of tradition. We all just sit down and watch Shrek. So, yeah.
Time has been very, very kind to Shrek. It's crazy because, a lot like that. It got played to death up here. It was on TV all the time, and everybody had a copy. And it's still an awesome movie. It's still fantastic. It's still very well done. I kind of wish... not to turn this into a wailing on DreamWorks list, but I kind of wish that DreamWorks would do more of that kind of film rather than just leaning back on the celebrity voices over and over. Because that film, again, it was based on a children's book, but it felt a lot more like Brave in the way that it felt like a modern fairy tale.
Yes, yeah.
So, it didn't make my list, although it did when I recorded episode one. And I think it's just because in the last few years, I've just discovered so many more that have kind of eked it out. But yeah, nobody could possibly argue with Shrek being on somebody's top five animated films. My next one, though, is a newer one, and it is DreamWorks. My next one is How to Train Your Dragon. You saw that, of course.
Yep.
How to Train Your Dragon, the one thing I will never, ever forget about that film is that film made the most of the theatrical experience. We didn't really, in Brave, we didn't talk about the 3D. Did you see it in 3D?
I did.
Okay. I don't know about you. It didn't do anything for the film. It was okay, but it didn't add to the film at all. Did you notice that too?
Yeah, I noticed much of a difference.
Yeah, exactly. There's one shot kind of when it's raining, where I thought the rain looked really good in 3D, but I was sort of surprised given all of the mist that was floating around in the film, and especially those will-o'-the-wisps. I was surprised that they didn't really play those up more. Conversely, How to Train Your Dragon might be one of the films that makes best use of 3D. Like, I would put it right up there with Hugo and with Avatar as some of the films that really, really brought you in. Specifically, the scenes of flight, because they are shot in a way that makes you feel like you're on that dragon. And it was, I had tears in my eyes the first time I saw it, and I saw that scene where he takes that test flight. It was stunning. And the whole story is just so simple and so wonderful that it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love that film too. I wouldn't say there's any particular attachment, but it's one of those films where kind of everyone just thought it was so cute, and we talked about it for ages and ages, and we all love Toothless, so yeah.
Did you kind of find he reminded you of your dog?
Yes,
because a little bit. Yeah, that was the one thing that I took away from it, was they designed Toothless in such a way that he reminded people of their pets.
Yeah,
it's one of my like most favorite films of the last 10 years or so, and one that I think is actually slightly underrated. So if you've never seen How to Train Your Dragon, do check it out, although I do feel sad for you if you haven't checked it out, because you won't see it on a big screen and feel like you're flying. We both have the same number three, so we'll talk about it together. But why don't you tell people what it is?
WALL-E.
Yes, it is. Now, why did that make your list?
Because it's kind of hard to explain how awesome this movie is. Like, it's just an amazing, amazing, amazing movie. And yeah, it just carries such a great message that you wouldn't perhaps expect from an animated film, which is what Pixar kind of deals with.
The great thing that WALL-E has going for it are the opening 25 minutes, which are basically a silent film.
Yeah.
Hey, there you go. You want to try and get people to rent two DVDs instead of one next week. Tell them to rent The Artist and WALL-E together.
Okay. You
know? Because that's basically what it is. That whole first half, there's, aside from them saying, Eva and WALL-E saying their names to one another, there's no real dialogue, right?
No, there isn't.
So if you can watch him being charming in that dump, I think that you could probably get through most of The Artist. And you're right, the message in it of you know, of in bits, like, let's be clear, it's an environmental message.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's unexpected, and it's kind of a great thing to wrap the film around. I do know some people who aren't really crazy about the film once it leaves Earth. Like, I think there are people who don't like the bulbous humans.
I like that.
I do too, because I can't help but feel like we're kind of going that way.
Yeah.
Not to start throwing stones or anything like that, but it kind of feels like we're getting it all brought to us. We're not going out to it. But no, even with that, I when I watched it last week, actually, it still played very, very well. Watching WALL-E kind of zipping around that ship, especially when he gets out into space and they do their little space ballet, him and Eve.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was. Was there anything else about WALL-E that kind of stuck out for you that we hadn't talked about?
No, not really. I just think it's a great movie.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful movie, and that's why it's very high on both of our lists. Now, your next film, actually, you're going to have to tell me about, because I haven't even heard of this.
Perfect Blue.
All right, now, when's it from? What's it about? Fill me in here.
Basically, if you've seen either Requiem for a Dream or Black Swan, there's a couple of scenes in each of those movies that revolve around baths, like when Marion is screaming in her bath,
yep,
or Matt is in the bath and she sees herself on top of the surface.
Mm-hmm.
What Darren Aronofsky did is that he liked those scenes so much from this anime film, which was made in 1998, I think, around there.
Yep, 97, I think, but who's counting?
90. he brought the remake rights for the movie so he could use that specific scene in Requiem for a Dream. But basically this movie, it's quite similar to Black Swan in a way. It's about this little this pop star, and she starts realizing that she has a stalker, and the stalker starts kind of playing with her brain, and it's a very kind of trippy movie because you don't know what's real and what isn't, and it kind of chops and changes between fantasy and reality, and it's just a really bizarre movie. But if you fully wrap your head around it, it's just a really great, great movie.
Was there anything else that like particularly latched it on to be like this high on your list?
I think it was the fact that before I'd seen it, I'd never seen an anime film before, or an animated film that was for adults, because this one's pretty hardcore because it's like an R18 over here or something.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
I'd never seen anything like it up until then, and I was just kind of floored by what it did. And it's a really bizarre movie, and I kind of like those psychological thrillers, and it was interesting to see it in a different format than what I was used to.
Okay. It's funny, actually, now that I look it up, I realize that the same director and studio who did Perfect Blue, they're actually the people who did Paprika.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you like Perfect Blue, I think I've just kind of given you one more reason to get you to order yourself in a copy of Paprika.
I definitely will.
Okay. Well, awesome. I didn't expect to actually get a new recommendation out of this list, so well done. but yeah, I certainly love Black Swan, and I loved Requiem for a Dream, as much as I can't really watch that film repeatedly just because it's such a bummer. So I'm definitely going to check this one out. And I do, I'm sure right now somebody's probably screaming back at their speakers that they told me to watch it before. So if you have told me to watch it before and I just didn't listen, I apologize. But what can I say? Stevie's more influential than you. So there. Well, that takes me to my number two. And my number two is really the only classic animated film on this list. My film comes all the way back from 1940, and it is Walt Disney's classic Pinocchio. I've told parts of this story before, that it was the first film I ever saw in a theater, and it was a story... The fairy tale of Pinocchio was told to me an awful lot as a child, so seeing it come to life, like being afraid of that whale and afraid of that carnival barker gypsy guy who would steal children and make them perform, and seeing them turn into donkeys, it all just awed me to the furthest degree. Like I don't think I was possibly prepared for what I saw, and I think that it has held up really, really well. It's still beautiful to look at. Of course, there's a little bit of shine is off it because it's a animated film from 1940, and they don't quite look the same as they do when they're designing stuff like Brave. But I think that it's a classic is all I can say. And Disney has made classics that tell slightly better stories, or certainly classics that have better artwork. I'm thinking specifically of like Sleeping Beauty. But Pinocchio was the one that's always kind of attached itself to me.
I really liked it. I like all those old Disney movies with the 2D drawings and stuff. It's kind of a nice breath of fresh air when you compare it to stuff like Brave and the 3D kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is kind of an odd point, but it almost feels like they weren't trying quite as hard.
Yeah.
You know, they were just out to make a movie. So, yeah, that's my number two. But time for your number one. So what is your favorite animated film?
Toy Story 3.
Interesting choice. Now, why that one?
I think it's because it made me cry more than any other movie I'd seen until I'd watched Requiem for a Dream.
there's a double feature I never thought I'd hear. Okay.
Especially watching all of the films together in the space of 3 nights, I just thought it was just a really special movie, and it came at the right time for me. Like, I think I was 15 when I saw it, and you kind of look back on the way you were when you were a kid and how you had all these toys and now you've abandoned them and you've kind of abandoned innocence kind of thing, and that's what really stuck with me. Just every time I think about it, I always want to start crying because I love it so much.
It's the one thing that I will never, ever get over in that film, because, again, I watched that one just a week ago, is the toy's sense of mortality. If you haven't seen it by now, well, first of all, I feel very sorry for you. But if you haven't seen it by now, there is a moment late in the film where the toys are very much in danger. They basically accept their fate, and they do it in such a way that you think to yourself for a few moments, oh my God, the toys are about to die. And it's like, you know, in the back of your brain, your conscious is screaming at you saying, there is no way Pixar would do this. There's no way Pixar would do this. But everything you're watching is just totally making you believe that Pixar is about to do this.
Yeah.
And it's such a heavy, heavy moment. And of course, yeah, there's the wonderful ending that I'll own it. I was crying during the end of that film. It makes it really hard to watch through 3D glasses when they're, you know, stained with tears. But no, I guess I was more curious as to why part three, because when I looked over your list and you came back with that one, I kind of thought you'd say the trilogy. But like you say, I guess Toy Story 2 didn't quite have the weight for you that part 3 did?
No, it definitely didn't.
Well, my number one, when I re-listened to Matinee Cast number one, I had this film at number 5, and I've watched it 2 or 3 more times in the last 3 years, and it has just really, really grown on me immensely. It's from 1999. It is a 2D animated film, like a classic Cell animated film, and it's The Iron Giant. Have you ever seen this?
No, I haven't.
Oh, goody. Okay, you need to watch this. I'm actually really excited that I get to recommend this to you now, because it's going to be so much fun. So it's directed by Brad Bird, the dude who did Ratatouille and The Incredibles. He just did the Mission Impossible film this fall.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this was a film that he did not for Pixar at all. Like, it was the studio's animated division. It does not come from Disney. It does not come from Pixar. And it's about a boy in It's like late 50s. It's during the time of like the American communist Red Scare. And he lives in a small town America. And he happens to find literally an iron giant. This space creature that has come to Earth that is, you know, several stories tall. Like, he towers over the town. He finds him and he befriends him. And the boy has it's just him and his mom, so he doesn't have a father figure. He doesn't really have friends, so he's kind of lonely. And he gets smitten with this giant. They become friends. He's trying to teach him to you know, not to be afraid, not to have other people be afraid of him. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. The character design of the giant himself is wonderful. He doesn't really talk, but when he does talk, it's Vin Diesel's voice, but he's just so gentle and, it's so hard to, it's kind of hard to articulate why, but he gets the giant to kind of understand who he is and what he's capable of. And, you know, the giant really takes to it in this very childlike way himself. They become, their relationship is very strange. On one hand, it's like they're brothers. On one hand, it's like they're friends. On one hand, it's kind of a father-son thing that's going on. And it all, it's such a wonderful movie. There's a great moment where the giant can fly. And when he is flying, the boy gets him to pretend like he's Superman, and when the giant starts to understand what that means, it's just this great moment of recognition. It's another film that sounds amazing. It looks beautiful. If people haven't seen it, I would just really, really recommend that they have. And Stevie, you in particular, I really recommend that you watch this. It's so great. And yeah, watching it two or three more times just in the last 2 years has really, really grown it in my impressions. And yeah, it's my favorite animated film with a bullet.
Okay, I'll definitely watch it.
All right. Well, there we go. That's our favorite ones. I'm sure that there were other ones that we both thought of that we didn't really talk about. There wasn't a whole lot of, it's kind of funny, there wasn't a whole lot of Pixar on our lists, despite the fact that we both talked about, you know, how great that studio is.
Yeah.
Which it's not to knock Pixar. It's just to, I think, I don't know about you, I was trying to kind of spread the wealth around.
Yes,
yeah,
so, same.
Yeah. A few others that I thought of that might have made it were The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Oh, I love them.
Or what was the other one? Oh, the other one I thought of was South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
I haven't seen that one.
No? Oh, that's another one. Give it a watch. Buckle up, because it is every bit as dirty as you think it's going to be, and then some. But it's another one that's got a great message to it. So those are some that could have made my list as well. Were there any others that just kind of missed your list?
Probably Pixar movies like Up and Toy Story and Finding Nemo, those kind of ones. Not really.
Well, there we go. That's a whole lot of animated goodness for the end of June, and that's a whole lot of animated goodness for episode 61 of the Matinee Cast. Come on back on Monday, July 9th for episode 62, where we'll be talking about The Amazing Spider-Man. Stevie writes Cinematic Paradox, which you can find at filmjunkie25.blogspot.com. Do you have anything coming up this week that people can look forward to?
I'll be finishing my French New Wave month, and by the end of the week, I'll have my review of Shame, which you'll know that I've been waiting for so long, and I get to see it this week. So, yeah.
We'll see how that goes. Are you now, because you are such a fan, I need to ask, are you going to have any kind of special content in anticipation of Christopher Nolan's new film, The Dark Knight Rises?
I'm planning on doing, watching all of his films again. But they're showing all the Batman films back to back on Wednesday through to Thursday. And I just don't know how I'm going to get over to Palmerston North. But I'm literally trying to save up money and give my parents big loads of money to take me. Just so excited for it.
I hope you get over there, because that certainly sounds like something awesome. They're doing something similar here. They're showing all three films on the big screen. I think they're actually doing an IMAX rendering of Batman Begins, but that happens to be the week that The Dark Knight Rises comes out is a week where I'm going to be I'm traveling in the early part of that week, so I can't really spend too much time in the cinema. So I'm just going to have to stick with the new film, but check out Stevie's site to see more thoughts on the other films. And where can people find you on Twitter?
Stevie Taylor.
There we go. My site is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find back episodes by going to thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them in Blueberry and the iTunes Music Store. They're all free. You get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on Brave, on your favorite film so far of 2012, and on your own animated favorites can be left in the comment section of this site. They can be emailed to ryan@thematinee.ca. You can also send them through Twitter, Facebook. I respond to damn near everything. Okay, any final thoughts before we go?
Not really. I'm so tired.
Sure you are. Well, I do thank you for staying up late, and I don't know when I'm ever going to get up this early for a podcast again, so this is kind of great that we've got this down on tape. But for Stevie Taylor, I'm Ryan. We'll see you at the matinee.
So I'm on BBC Two now, telling Terry Wogan how I made it, and what I made is unclear now. But his deference is, and his laughter is, my words and smile are so easy now. Yes, it's easy now. Yes, it's easy now. Find me and follow me through corridors and factories and files you must follow me. This academic factory will find me in the matinee.
On July 17th, the podcast trilogy rises.